We have a tradition at Applewood Community Church on Christmas Eve. Perhaps I should say, I have a tradition at Applewood Community Church on Christmas Eve of reading a story. And the congregation has been gracious and has blessed that over the years. You know, we celebrate the Advent season and we zero in on the four Sundays of Advent a bit on the themes, the traditional themes of Advent in the life of the church. Theme of hope, peace, joy, and love. And so it is, it's always my intention to find a story that picks up on some of those themes. So tonight, it's my pleasure to read for you a story called A Precious Memory. I'm not sure who invented the family cake. My mother called it that. And for all I know, it might have been her own idea. For as long as I can remember, it has always been a part of Christmas. Mom was a great one for making cakes and decorating them to suit the occasion. Birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, Thanksgiving, even the 4th of July. But the family cake for Christmas was always the special one. It appeared in its full glory at supper on Christmas Eve, a prelude to all the surprises, mysteries, and excitement that were to come. The best thing about it was that Mom had carefully put all our names on it in different colored icing. There were 5 of us all together, and each wedge of the cake bore one name. Bob and Ruth were the names of Mom and Dad. Then there was Bess, that was me, the eldest. Then Matthew, 5 years younger. And finally, little Timmy, who was the youngest. Each section had its candle, and a tiny Santa Claus stood in the middle, its feet stuck in the icing. I had the honor, being the eldest child, of lighting the candles and carrying the cake in for dessert. There was always a loud cheer when I brought it in. I can still see little Timmy in his high chair, his fingers clenched with excitement, his eyes glistening in the candlelight. He would gaze in wonder at the cake, the Christmas tree, the decorations. When Mom cut the cake, Timmy had to have his name pointed out so that he was sure his piece was the right one. Then he would clap his hands and laugh with joy. My father would joke all through the meal, tell Mom how pretty she looked, and how lucky she was to have such a splendid family. It was a happy time. Then one year, Mom didn't make the family cake. That was the Christmas when Timmy wasn't there anymore. I was 12 when it happened. March was busy on the farm, with so many calves being born and all the lambing as well. Some of Dad's calves got scour, a difficult ailment to cure, and he seldom had a minute to himself. One afternoon, Mom had to go into town for an appointment with the doctor, and Mrs. Harris, our part-time help, was ill. Matthew and I were in school, so it fell to Dad to look after Timmy for 2 or 3 hours. There was nothing special about that, for we were all used to taking turns caring for Timmy. Things seemed to be quiet on the farm that day, and Dad promised to take Timmy fishing for a couple of hours until Mom got back. The stream nearby flowed into an old mill pond, and it was often possible to find trout there. They were just setting off when one of the farmhands came to report trouble with a newborn calf. Dad took Timmy with him to the shed where the calf and its mother were lying. Dad told Timmy to sit down on a bale of hay and wait. And while the busyness of working on the calf went on, it took the men a while to realize that Timmy was no longer there. Dad abandoned the calf at once and looked everywhere, in the house, in the tractor shed, and all over in the barns. Soon everybody on the farm, as well as the neighbors, had joined in the search. Minutes dragged on into an hour, and an hour into 2 hours. It was Mrs. Harris' husband who found Timmy in the mill pond. He had wandered quietly down to the stream to look for fish. Nobody could tell how it had happened. We only knew when he was taken out, it was too late. After that, things could never be the same. All through that spring and summer, we lived our lives and did the ordinary tasks, and we hid our grief as best we could when we weren't alone. Dad was quieter now, and Mom went around with a brooding look on her face. She often spoke to Dad in a hard tone I hadn't heard before. Although I was only 12, I knew something more than our loss was driving them apart. I sensed that she blamed Dad for what had happened to Timmy. In her mind, it had to be somebody's fault, perhaps hers, for not being there. During all that time, I never saw her cry, but there were times when she seemed like a statue or like somebody who was sleepwalking. Never once did she mention Timmy. The months passed. Time began its work of healing, but the old warm feeling of being united family was no more. And yet my mother was even more attentive than before toward Matthew and me, anxiously watching and protective. But between her and my father, there remained a gulf, a distance, which showed, not in silence, but in the lack of companionship and a certain wariness in their conversation. Once, when they thought I had gone out of the house, I heard Dad say, "Well, if that's how you feel, I could go and stay with Charles in Ontario." I didn't think at the time that it meant anything more than a visit to an uncle who was also a farmer in Canada. Charles was Dad's brother, and I could barely remember the tall, wide-shouldered man who had once come here to see us, but as the weeks passed and I sometimes caught the word Canada just before they broke off a conversation, I began to be afraid. Maybe Dad wasn't going there just for a visit. Matthew, who was barely 7 years old, wasn't aware of my fears or what caused them. He was the one who talked about Timmy, and he often talked to me about the things Timmy had said or done. He seemed to know I was the one who would really listen. Harvest time came, and with it, a golden spell of sun and ripeness. The early September days with their mellow plenty made me feel that the happy, close-knit days would come back again. My mother was busier than I had ever seen her. She never seemed to be still, and in October, she and Mrs. Harris set about their usual task of brightening the house for the approach of Christmas. They painted the kitchen and all the bedrooms. It was a bustling time, and any visitor would have thought that ours was a cheerful home that housed a happy family. I knew, though, that it was all on the surface, and lurking beneath was a shadow that we couldn't chase away. Dad sometimes tried to bring back the old fun and banter. Matthew and I would always respond, but it would only be when Mom wasn't around. Once when the cleaning was going on, I saw Mrs. Harris stop outside the room that had been Timmy's. "Do you want me to start on this one?" she quietly asked my mother. "No, we'll leave that for now," Mom replied very quickly. In time, of course, December came around. There was no question that we wouldn't celebrate Christmas the way we always had. A week before Christmas Day, Dad cut a spruce tree from the woods, and soon all the baubles and lights were glittering in the corner of the living room. The other decorations went up one by one, festoons, the bright holly and the sparkling tinsel. We wrapped our presents as usual and hid them until it was time to put them under the tree. The snow came in short, powdery showers, just enough to bring its extra magic to the bare trees and hedges. It was just 2 days before Christmas Eve when I asked, "Have you made the family cake yet, Mom?" She stopped what she was doing, and again, I saw the sad, defeated look come into her eyes. "No, Bess, there's so much to do, and I don't think I'll have time. Maybe I'll make a special cake for New Year's Eve." It was a bitter disappointment, like a broken promise, or as if something warm that had been part of our lives no longer bound us all together. I opened my mouth to protest, but then I realized she wasn't really telling me the truth. All the constraint between my father and my mother, all the unnatural silences and the strange secret discord suddenly swelled in my throat, and I couldn't contain my fears any longer. "Mom, is Dad going away to live in Canada?" That startled her, and she replied without looking directly at me, "We haven't decided anything yet, but your dad hasn't seen Uncle Charles for a very long time, and a change might do him good. It's been a hard year for him and for all of us." Again, I was aware of hearing only half of the truth. I felt all the sure and safe things in our lives were slipping away. Tears filled my eyes, but I fought them back. "Why can't we all be happy again?" I cried and turned away without waiting for an answer. I didn't tell Matthew what I had found out about Canada. I suppose I still hoped it wouldn't happen, but I did tell him there was to be no family cake. He looked at me with round, disbelieving eyes. "But there's always been a family cake, Bess. It's the one where we all have our own special piece with our name and candle on it, you know." I put my arm around him and made myself sound cheerful. "Never mind, maybe I'll think up another surprise." As I spoke, I suddenly knew what I was going to do. "I tell you what, if Mom can't make a family cake, we'll make it ourselves." "Are you sure you know how?" he said, doubt in his voice. "Suppose Mom won't let us?" By now, I was gripped with a firm resolve. "I've watched her making it before, and I think I can do it. We'll keep it secret until Christmas Eve. Mrs. Harris will help us. We can all take the things to her house and do it there." That was how we spent the next 2 days, in conspiracy and excitement. Mrs. Harris enjoying the plot and covering up our absences from the house. I'll admit that I needed more help with the preparations than I thought, but I managed to do all the icing part myself, although it wasn't as neat and pretty as it would have been with Mom's expert touch. Matthew watched me do it, leaning over Mrs. Harris' kitchen table with breathless concentration. "It's got to be like it always is," he said constantly. "Timmy's piece has got to be there too. It's his cake as well as ours, and his name has to be in blue." Finally, it was finished. We had bought the ingredients and candles and the funny little Santa Claus out of our allowances and put a pink and green ribbon around the cake. Smuggling it into our house wasn't easy, but in the end, the cake was brought home after dark on Christmas Eve and safely hidden in a cupboard on the porch. Christmas Eve was the kind of day that happens in almost every home, friends bringing presents, Mom or Dad making hurried visits to the store for things that had almost been forgotten, and a general trend toward the kitchen where my mother ruled with her usual grace. All that was missing was that mysterious something that had wielded its magic in other years. I could tell it was gone, and I didn't know any way of bringing it back. Dad tried to make Christmas seem as much fun as it ever was. He poured punch for us all and teased Matthew about hanging his stocking too low on the mantle. Even Mom smiled once or twice, and for a moment, the family feeling came alive again. Didn't last long. I caught Dad watching Mom with that lost look, knowing that he was wishing she would join in. When supper was served, Matthew and I were so keyed up, we could hardly eat a thing. We had agreed that as soon as the main course was over, I would make an excuse and go out to the porch cupboard for the cake. I had matches ready to light for the candles. My heart was beating fast as I slipped out to the back. It seemed to take ages to get the 5 candles lit, but at length I was ready. It was a smaller cake than the one Mom usually made, and the names on it were a bit blotchy, but it looked brave with its colors and candles. I was proud of it. They were still sitting there when I carried it in and set it on the center of the table. Nobody spoke at first, but Matthew's face wore a triumphant grin. Dad flashed a quick look at Mom and said, "Well, where did that come from? I thought the family cake had gotten lost this year." I put my arm around Matthew and laughed with the pleasure of seeing our plan succeed. "It's our surprise. Mom was so busy, we thought we would do it ourselves. Well, nearly by ourselves." Mom said nothing. Her face had gone quite pale. She sat looking down at the cake with all the names on it. When she spoke, her voice was hoarse and tight. "You shouldn't have done that. I told you there would be no cake. It doesn't mean the same anymore." Matthew's smile vanished. I felt all the love and brightness fade into the hopeless feeling I knew so well. My despair was followed by a hot wave of anger. "I don't understand," I burst out. "It's a family cake. We're still a family, aren't we?" I was looking straight at my mother, and I couldn't stop the words tumbling out. "Is it because Timmy's name is on it? Do we have to leave him out of everything because he isn't here? Wherever he is, he would want it like this. He loved Christmas and the family cake, and he loved us too. It's not fair to shut him out." I sat down, nervous and drained. It was Dad who spoke gently then to Mother. Bess is right, Ruth. We have to accept things as they are. Otherwise, we'll destroy all we've got left. Suddenly, it was like a dam breaking. Tears began to spill over my mother's cheeks, something I hadn't seen during all the long months since March. She pushed back her chair and hurried out of the room. Dad followed her. Matthew and I were left alone, silent and shaken, looking at the festive table with the remains of the meal and the lopsided cake. Now it looked pathetic. It seemed a long time, but after a bit, they came back again, Mom and Dad. They stood very close. With Dad's arm around Mom's waist, her tears were gone, her face flushed, but she looked calm and somehow beautiful. She came to me and kissed me. "I'm sorry, Bess," she said simply. After that, Mom sat down and carefully cut the sections of the cake. Then she served each piece until there was only Timmy's portion alone on the dish. For me, it was as if a storm had passed, leaving flowers limp but grateful for the rain. There was a new light in Dad's eyes, and I couldn't restrain myself from asking the question that was still in the front of my mind. "Are you really going away to Canada, Dad?" I asked. He smiled and he shook his head. "Maybe next year. When I find someone to look after the farm, we'll all go there for a vacation." As we talked, I heard a sound from outside, faint above the wailing wind. "It's the carol singers," Matthew shouted excitedly. "They're here." "Well, go and bring them in, Matthew," Dad said, "and we'll make some hot drinks for them." There were seven singers, all young people that we knew. They were glad to come inside out of the cold. After the cocoa was finished, they ranged themselves around our table and sang my favorite Christmas hymn. It sounded especially beautiful because in spite of all the trouble we had passed through, we were a family again. I saw that Mom and Dad were holding hands and their eyes often met, something I hadn't seen in a long time. And in the center of the table, on the untouched piece of cake, Timmy's little candle burned bravely on like a precious memory and a tiny beacon of faith.